Well, my candle story was I had, you know, big hair one time, really long and frizzy, and I gave this one sermon, and people were just staring at me. They were just engrossed. Well, afterward, everyone came out and I said, "Oh, we were so afraid that you were going to back up into that candle and your hair was going to ignite." So I don't think they heard anything I said, you know.
I do know a pastor who loved to play the violin around Christmas time, and he was playing much lighted up sanctuary with candles all around. And as he was playing his surplice, his surplice caught on fire. Well, the candles over there, he just was doing this thing.
Oh, no, oh, no.
And the organist stopped playing. He didn't pay attention. She just went.
That's great.
See, you guys are into the spirit of this because it's all about stories.
Stories and symbols, metaphors. Did you get your paper?
I got my paper.
Oh, I see.
Oh,
so this is your gathering activity.
What?
So we're.
No, you don't think Anne looks like Rose, Rosemary. But first time I saw her, she looks like Rose. What's that girl? And so we talked to her. She is a staff nurse in Susie's Church.
Yeah.
Oh, Susie
Birch?
All right, I go there.
He's
really nice. I work at the church council.
Well,
yeah. So actual art with
It could just be a symbol.
Okay, I'll just do that.
And we just need a quick one because we need to just look at the time. Go on here.
Well,
there's people hiding up there that aren't doing their artwork. Are you doing your artwork?
I'm recording your session, so if you'll say your name at some point.
Oh, okay. So I'm Martha Meyer.
And I'm John Rosenberg.
And we're, what's the title of our session?
This is all about the importance of story. And we're practicing our faith in Salmon Nation. And we're, everybody's drawing a symbol right now of the Northwest. Okay, well, I'll bite.
So you want to put your symbol on a bigger piece of paper?
Oh,
tell me your name again.
I'm Anne.
Anne, okay. I'm
another
Anne.
I'm not a good drawer.
Oh, it does. Okay, put a word on it then.
Neither am I.
I am.
We're easy. You knew word. Do a musical note. You do origami. With Jeff, you've learned how to differentiate. Differentiation in okay, John.
I figure we gotta have this.
I'm glad I'm not too light.
What is it?
No. wait a minute. I'm not done with this yet. I got more stuff to put on this symbol.
Oh, Mara, we're drawing symbols.
Okay.
So if you want to draw one, here's a.
Yes, I do.
And it doesn't need to be
a symbol for the Pacific Northwest. Well, I know what I want to do. Okay, mine's ready.
Okay, I'll do it. Thank
you. Launch it?
Sassy, you don't have to slide it. Somebody needs to
wait for this. I don't know if I can actually grease it.
Face mask. I love that one. Okay.
This is a smiling
salmon. That was the first thing we bought.
Really?
That is, and we still have them. We use them.
Well, you know, it's funny, after my Gore-Tex jacket, I guess that's another good one, because I remember being in Berkeley at seminary and then coming to Seattle, and I was home because everyone else is wearing Gore-Tex. Like in Berkeley, I was the only one that wore Gore-Tex because I knew you didn't need to. But just remember sitting in a restaurant and going, oh, they all dress like me here.
Yeah, somebody was fashion.
Oh, nice, John.
Fashion, that salmon is happy because it's spawning, it's about to have sex. So. That's what the red stripe is about. The fashion critic of the New York Times is complaining about people in the Northwest.
What do you mean you're too late?
Even when they go out to.
I got talking to some people. Well, a couple of heads
are
saying.
Dick and
Saul.
Got your high hiking boots.
Okay, so we're going to, if you're working on your symbol, you can still do your symbol. And we're just, we're talking about stories today, but we also wanted to talk a little bit about metaphors, and well, I'll tell you where I'm leading here in a second, but we've got some symbols up here. Some of them, maybe you can tell what they are. Maybe we've got a ponderosa and fir, cedar river, a spawning salmon, a fleece vest, kind of a, what's I call them, trees, river, mountains. This is the Palouse, so another side of the Northwest. Rolling hills, and is there weed on those?
Have you got one? Yeah,
this is really a symbol mask.
That's all right.
Undetermined.
Here, we got another one. That's a great one.
Trees. Oh, a totem pole.
Yeah.
Very cool.
We've got a, this is my rendition of Mount Hood or any Northwest mountain. So my question for you up here is, tell us your name, and then choose one symbol from those made by the group that has meaning for your faith life. And then if you can briefly describe, and I thought about this already, that's why I chose Mount Hood. My name is Martha, and one of the things about Mount Hood that when you're driving around Portland or Vancouver, most of the time you can't see it because of the clouds. And every now and then it appears, you go, oh, isn't that wonderful? And it reminds me of God, that a lot of times God's always there, but I often forget about it. And every now and then God makes an appearance, and I go, oh, yeah. So that's my symbol. John, do you want to try this?
I mean, I looked up to me. There needed to be a fish there. My name is John.
Elder above the buildings in Portland.
Oh, okay.
That's my salmon, and I've been sort of captured by them ever since I first came out here, and I had the opportunity to see a salmon in the wild, and it was sort of a religious experience for me. So they sort of symbolize, you know, what there is of my spirituality is summed up in the salmon.
Okay. And you, thanks. So, and you don't have to necessarily use your symbol if you don't want to, as you introduce yourself.
You can pick somebody else's if you want to.
If it has meaning for you. And if none of them have meaning, well. So who wants to go next?
I will. I'm Gretchen Stewart, and I'll choose the one I drew. And I hadn't thought about it in the way that you said here, but mine has the fir tree on it and the ponderosa pine and the cedar. And we do a lot of backpacking. Cedar always needs water, and it reminds me of the living water.
Mm.
And the ponderosa pine can survive, you know, the huge fires and with their thick bark, and sort of you can go through horrible times and still live. God is with you. And the fir, the friendly fir, you can grab onto it, and it won't prickle your hands if you're needing to pull yourself uphill. You can grab onto fir branches and it's soft and helpful. So
I think you got a whole sermon there. I'm going to take that one home with me and preach it.
Well, I haven't even thought about why I like all those trees and how they could relate to your faith, but there you have it.
Great, thank you. Next, yeah.
Okay. Mine is the one that doesn't really look all that much like the Palouse, except in my brain. It is rolly hills, and it's very rich soil, so they do strange things. I mean, they cut down all the trees and plant lentils and wheat and barley and stuff. But anyway, there's a very gentle, extraordinarily beautiful, gentle like dunes all the way throughout there. And Kathleen Norris's book, Dakota, the subtitle of that is a spiritual geography. And we noticed soon after we came to the Palouse that the geography does fit seemingly the spirit of the people who live there. They're people very gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's in a great big hurry. People listen to each other, and the people grow very old together. People are just, you know,
nice.
The 80s, 90s, all over the place.
Uh-huh.
And people come there for a short time and stay for the rest of their lives.
Really?
And,
just,
and there's something about that. Peaceability in the community that works very well for everybody, it seems like.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So who else? So Anne?
I'm Anne. I drew river and some trees and some mountain. All very important to me. I guess I'll speak a little bit to the river. A phrase that I often say and I often hear is let justice roll like a river. That's very important to me, social justice and being Christ-like. The other thing about river, it just seems, you know, rocks and hard times will be there, but a river seems to often get over it or find a way around. And, you know, sometimes it's bigger and sometimes it dries up a little bit, but quite often it's there. I mean, it's rare for it to disappear. So, yeah.
Mark, we'll give you a minute to think, but we do symbols. If you didn't draw one, it's okay. But we're taking one of these symbols and then talking about how it may have meaning for our faith life.
Oh, one of these?
Yeah, one of these.
Or you can make your own.
Or you can make your own.
I would take salmon.
Okay.
We are the salmon and cedar people, and salmon has given us native people life and makes our lives grow on, and all part of living life is life for us, and I choose the salmon because it keeps us alive.
Thank you. Maureen?
Okay, I made a totem because I heard you say something that I associate with the Northwest,
mm-hmm.
and I associate mountains and rivers and ocean with the Northwest, but also with other parts of the world. So I thought a totem is something that is unique to my way of understanding to the Northwest. And as far as my faith life is concerned, it's a journey that's still in process. It hasn't been finished. And it tells the story of something about where we come from, and is giving acknowledgement to the generations that are part of our journey. So that's my you know, the mothers and fathers and grandfathers and grandmothers and great 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 greats and the stones before them
that have okay
and whatever
formed us, yeah, okay.
And I think that the totem is just such a powerful thing that this part of the world, the culture of the native people from this part of the world, have sent forward to us.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you. Dad, do you know?
Well, I mean, that's.
You don't have to use yours. You can choose another
one.
Well,
yeah, but that's the buildings in downtown Portland with Mount Hood behind them, and I. There's one spot where you go up on the West Hill, as it's called in Portland, where there's a Japanese garden, and there's a viewpoint. You look out over the city, through the trees, and you see these buildings, and then you see, on a clear day, Mount Hood up behind them. And I'm in a lot of transitions right now in my life, but I've sort of become this urban person, which is sort of different in. You know, to be an urban person in Northwest, it's possible. And it's kind of interesting if people live in my building who've come from New York because they wanted to come west into an urban setting, and you don't, you know. But, you know, I'm a building with 220 other units in it. And I haven't quite figured out, I don't know what that does with my faith life, but I know that as far as my church affiliation is, there seems to be some disconnect between the church I attend and its location in the And I haven't quite figured that out, but, and there's a whole bunch of churches on the park, we call them the park blocks in Portland, and I just don't quite know how those things fit in. And so that's one of the things, like I've been involved with the Downtown Neighborhood Association. The thing that surprises me is that I feel that I live in a community. I never thought that, I mean, but you know, the Safeway store, that's our store, and this, I don't know, it's just trying to figure out how that all fits.
Okay. Kind of that dichotomy between the urban and the nature.
And, you know, and the role of the church down there.
Okay. And do you want to share? I know you're hiding up there.
No, the police, that just makes me think of, you know, gratitude for the physical dimensions of faith.
Uh-huh.
For the body, the ability of the body to move, and for the environment that surrounds us.
Oh, those are some great. Okay. Well, those are some great symbols. And part of the idea, you know, that we've talked about as part of our conversations are, you know, what are the symbols of where we live here in the Northwest, and we live, come from different parts of the Northwest, and can we bring these into our religious life, into our preaching, into our worship space, into our faith life? And so again, you've just given me a few ideas. I go, oh. I can use that. And we're going to be talking a little bit more then about, you know, our stories and how the stories that come from our place kind of shape us. We have a little bit of opening worship then.
I'm thinking about the fleece vest and the Gore-Tex jacket, and it completely reframes the full armor of God.
Yeah, got to remember that one too.
So armed against nature, or against the weather.
Yeah, with your hiking boots. And
so imagine all of our symbols now in a choir and doing what choirs do. This is from Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky proclaims its maker's handiwork. One day tells its tale to another, and one night imparts knowledge to another. Although they have no words or language, and their voices are not heard, their sound has gone out into all lands, and their message to the ends of the world. Where God has pitched a tent for the sun, it comes forth like a bridegroom out of his chamber. It rejoices like a champion to run its course. It goes forth from the uttermost edge of the heavens and runs out about to the ends of it again. Nothing is hidden from its burning heat. The teaching of the Lord is perfect and revives the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure and gives wisdom to the simple. And then just this, I won't sing this for you, but this is a wonderful piece of poetry as we're talking about symbols. And yesterday we were talking about metaphors and using, you know, different metaphors. But this one called God the Sculptor of the Mountains. God the sculptor of the mountains, God the miller of the sand, God the jeweler of the heavens, God the potter of the land. You are womb of all creation. We are formless. Shape us now. God the nuisance of the Pharaoh, God the cleaver of the sea, God the pillar of the darkness, God the beacon of the free. You are fount of all deliverance. We are sightless. Lead us now. God the dresser of the vineyard, God the planter of the wheat, God the reaper of the harvest, God the source of all we eat. You are host at every table. We are hungry. Feed us now. God the unexpected infant, God the calm, determined youth, God the table-turning prophet, God the resurrected truth. You are present every moment. We are searching. Meet us now.
Whoa, what number is that?
That was 736, and it was, the text is from John Thornburg, born 1954, and then the music is from Amanda Husberg, born 1940.
It's got a great tune, too.
I kind of was trying to figure it out. And,
it's fairly simple.
Unlike Jeff, I don't have perfect pitch.
Sure.
736.
Ann, you can play that, couldn't you, right now?
Well. Come on, Ann, be an angel.
tell some stories.
Yeah, I think Anne.
Halfway down.
She's halfway down. That's good.
Okay, well, she's coming down here, actually. Well, we'll go on to the next spot, and we can come back to that. We're going to be talking about stories. I wanted to have you share just a little tiny bit of your story with a partner, and so I thought one way to do that is to think of a time the past few days where you've experienced God somewhere, someplace, through someone here, and then just take a moment to think about it, and then we'll pair up and we'll share it with partners. So just take a moment to think about the past couple of days and one God moment that you're going to share. Okay, so do we have enough folks? Do we have odd or evens here, Dad? So why don't people pair up? Maybe not with your someone you don't know very well. You two pair up, and I'll pair up with Marin, and maybe you two pair up. And then share with each other your God moment, and just focus. Don't kind of without the other person commenting, but just focus on listening.
How do you define a God moment?
Well, just an experience of God's love or God's presence or God's grace.
An epiphany, kind of?
It doesn't have to be a big epiphany, but it could be just the time when you get back about a God who's present.
I'm sorry,
that's kind of language use our church.
I've picked mine.
I've got a couple. You got one.
Here's somebody.
Process in like 45 minutes. First it was other people, and then it was
sharing the symbols. You know, John and I talked about whether or not we're going to do this for the opening activity, do this or not. We know we need to do it. But just making sure that people's symbols and microphones and the trees.
So when you came up here Christmas, did you ever meet Glenn and Harold Peterson? That they brought their kids up here.
That's one of the things I always do when I come.
Indiana, when they were here, kind of fire.
2000 to 2003, maybe.
That was some of them.
That's somebody's art, you know?
Well, it's a, there's a recipe for smart cinnamon.
Oh.
But it's basically, it's supposed to be a cell.
So hopefully the rest of you, if you're done sharing, if we can pull attention back here. I don't want you to share your God moment, but what I just want to talk about for a second was, what's the power of listening? What's it like to be, you can think about this time or another time, but what is it like to be listened to when you share a little piece of your story like we just did? Or again, you may think of another time when you've been listened to, and what's that like?
I think you open up yourself more, and you are giving of yourself when you're talking to another person.
Okay. Thank you. Other things?
But there's more associations, so you identify with the listener. Or the listener, or the teller, whichever way it's going.
Okay.
One of the things that happened to us was that we wanted to be in conversation with some people, so we set up these conversations. And, you know, I think Martha said, you know, when we first told people that we wanted to have we were eight pastors, and we wanted to, you know, we wanted to hear them, we wanted to listen to them. They, of course, did not believe us, because their assumption was that, you know, we wanted to talk to them, and they were pretty sure they knew what we wanted to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was very interesting to, especially, I think of Tim Egan, but it was true of others as well, you know. He's usually the guy that's answering, or asking the questions.
He's a reporter,
so he's asking the questions and listening. And now we were sort of interrogating him, you know, gently, but trying to prod out his story. And I mean, it was amazing. Once people figured out that we were really serious about listening to them, I mean, man, we got stuff that we could not believe, you know, from people that just shared really powerful things. Mm-hmm. And think about listening as a spiritual practice. And, you know, so when we were listening, our spiritual practices, we said, well, listening's got to be one of them, because, you know, what you say.
And for pastors, it's generally not something they teach us in seminary.
when you think about pastors or even presenters up here, I mean, it's like you think, oh, my really important time is coming up. I've got a session coming up, or I've got a church a worship service, or a, you know, Sunday's coming, and I got to get my sermon together. But in fact, probably the most powerful work you're doing is during the week when you're listening to people that are part of your community, or, and reaching out to new people in your community, you know, letting them tell you instead of you telling them.
Well, and that's what we, and then to apply that to our churches. Again, people come in, and everybody's faith experience is a little bit different, and we want to tell them they have to believe or think a certain way, but something, I think really we elicit God a lot better when we listen to their story and help them identify God in their life. So again, it's changing kind of how we're doing things. I'm going to transition, and we can continue to talk about listening, you know, as part of storytelling is also story listening, and we're going to change a little bit to move to storytelling. But one of the people that we did meet with was Diana Butler Bass, and she does a lot, again, with the power of story, and you'll see one of her quotes on there.
Let me wait with this one? Or?
Yeah, well, she's the first quote on your other page, too, John.
Okay.
Yeah,
if you want to just take a look at this, you know, just kind of skim it over, but what she talks about, are any of you familiar with her work, Diana Butler Bass? She writes about something that sounds like an oxymoron, vital mainline congregations, you know? So, you know, most people think of mainline congregations as...
Not being very vital,
and she says, au contraire, and so... But she talks in there about the importance of story. Maybe just take a minute if you want to and kind of skim that over, and we'll say a little bit more about that, or talk about a little bit about that in the larger group. I'll give you a minute.
Just the first quote.
Just the first one?
Or do you want to skim the whole sheet?
I was going to have them just look the whole thing over, because that's what I always do.
Okay.
We couldn't do it anyway.
Okay, which of you are on the importance of stories?
Am I right here?
Yeah, this is the one that you handed out. Okay, I just want to make
you can keep looking at that if you want to, but any response to
that? Well, I'm struck by this Tom Egan saying that the Northwest doesn't have a original narrative.
Yeah, that was one of the things that he says is that, and he's a storyteller, obviously, but he says that his thing was that, you know, there's lots of individual stories, but his sense was that there wasn't a sort of an overarching big story of the Northwest. And, you know, so say something about that.
Well, it just seems to be there. As much as any other region of the country, and the story is. Well, it has a number of threads. I mean, it has the whole thread of the indigenous peoples, and then the thread of, you know, the Hudson Bay Company, the trappers coming in, and white settlement, and people going through all kinds of hardships to get out here, and, and kind of a history of, well, you know, and then the various gold rushes that were all over. You know, it just seems to me that there is a story there that unwinds until finally the place sort of settled down. But I don't know why you would say there's this narrative. I don't know what the New England narrative is, or what the South.
Well, I suppose it's the Pilgrims, huh? Is that the one?
I have no idea.
I think when he talks about the South, he would
plantation.
Say, you can correct us if we're wrong here, Dean, because you know more about them, but it's, you know, the whole, as we were talking about the war of northern aggression, the Civil Wars, you know, that's, you know, what led up to and what transpired from that is a pretty powerful narrative in the South.
I think, I'm not sure this is where we're going right now, but I think that because of the transience of everybody, all of those regional narratives are getting dissolved somehow.
Okay, that may be the case. If you had to think about the upper Midwest, you know, where you're listening to a lot of stories, what would you say? Is there a big narrative of that?
Well,
a big story?
There's a story of immigration and meeting the Native American cultures and the pain of that that took place, climaxed in 1862 with a war, the Dakota Uprising, and then the subsequent hanging of 30 of the...
That's the Mankato?
Yeah. That New Ulm, actually, was where it happened. But anyway, that, but I would say that is just very local.
Okay.
No, that's about Minnesota, really. And when you talk about the plains, perhaps the one for the Lutherans is the one Karl Rohlbach, the Giants in the Earth. Mm. That would be our story, you know. But again, that requires people know that story. And that isn't a story that's taught in our schools, necessarily. You know, something we get sideways. So I really have a hard time with that, having one narrative that you identify your culture with. I think there's a way of doing things that's more connected to being from a certain area. Like Middle Westerners are do-it-yourselfers and proud of it, and you'd be surprised how many houses that go up for sale at atrociously high prices because the owners think, I did it and I did all this work and it's just terrible. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, that's part of our culture, is do it yourself. And there's a bias against symbolic stories with symbolism. They want real life stories, you know, literally about, we know what it's about, you know, none of this fancy stuff about the gods and goddesses or anything mythological at all. That's Middle Western. But is that connected to an overriding narrative? I can't name it.
Mark, what, you know, when you think about the Northwest and the story of the Northwest and the Native peoples here, what is it? What's the story?
we have dances with wolves shows a lot of the narration of what happened as the people that have come into the Northwest.
Okay, okay. So that was, that, you know, that, you know, we can, we don't have to decide whether there's a big narrative or not, but, and whether that's even a useful idea, that was something that Egan, you know.
Part of his point was that he thought we kept trying to erase our story, that we may have one,
right,
but we either don't know it, or because we always want to start over, we don't want to acknowledge it.
And then what strikes me, because there's so much immigration, been so much immigration, and, you know, people moving into the region.
Right.
Is that there's a story there, and I'm not sure that, you know, anybody says here that most people in the, something most people in the Northwest don't have one, they've shed one. Well, I think what happens for a lot of people when they're moving out here, they maybe have shed a story, but I think they're wanting to participate in a new story.
Right.
You know, and it's not that there isn't a story here. There's a lot of story here going back. And you know, it just, and I
well, hold the thought. Let's shift gears for a second and think about the communities that you're part of. And that could be either your church community or your, you know, your work community or whatever. And the question becomes, the question to think about is, you know, what's a story that defines your, let's say, your congregation or your, you know, I'm thinking about the Greater Church Council. Is there something that people kind of refer to at the board meetings and say, well, remember when, what's his face or did this or whatever? I mean, as you think about your church or your community or something, is there a story? Mark, you talked about the stories that moved down through generations, and, but how about your communities? What's something that,
well,
yeah.
Well, this is not in relation to a worshiping community.
That's okay.
But it's the, I don't know what to call it, except environmental activist community.
Okay.
And so the story there is, I think, the repeating of times when humans stood up either at a public hearing in the region,
okay,
or went to D.C., and or went into the woods, into the wilderness or national forest, and advocated with actions or words, or both,
okay,
for the rest. They would not necessarily use the word creation, but for the animals or the fish. You know, we've spoken at hearings for salmon or grizzlies. I'm trying,
okay,
to remember what
a sustainable ecosystem.
Yeah, and trees. You know, I mean, just the forest. Uh-huh. So all those things.
Okay.
So they recount.
How,
oh, remember when so-and-so went there and just blew the socks off of so-and-so in his office in D.C., showing,
sure,
oh, you don't do clear cuts anymore? Here, clear cut, clear cut, clear cut, showing photos of.
Or
yeah.
What was the gal's name, Julia Butterfly?
Oh, up in the
trees.
Yeah. And tree sitters in a very close, you know, to Moscow in Idaho.
So there's one. Somebody else
yeah.
got a story like that. That's a good one from their community. Yeah.
I've discovered being a pastor in place for, been there 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I become the carrier of the story.
Okay.
The congregation.
That's a
There's
pretty
a lot of turnover.
Yeah.
A lot of mobility in this congregation being right outside of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So I find myself being the carrier of the history of the congregation, for better or worse. You know, I only know a piece of it. But
so is there a piece that you carry that sort of defines that congregation in your mind? The story that's, you know, if I wanted to see who these people are, or describe them, this would be the story I'd tell.
Yeah, here, a number of them, to the extent that I'm aware of. The other impression I have is that the people coming into a congregation are really more intent on creating the story than
hearing
learning.
Yeah.
Mm.
not a real sense. We're going to document, you know, or we're going to look to the past. But we're doing. We're moving ahead. We're looking to the future.
Let me give you an example of the kind of thing I'm thinking about. Now, when I was in Vancouver at St. Paul's, we were right downtown, right across from the jail and the county courthouse and the county offices and all that. And it was where there was a lot of homeless vets in downtown Vancouver. And there was a ministry there that provided some shelter, but provided food for not only those homeless vets, but also for anybody in the neighborhood who needed. So there was always families and stuff toward the end of the month when food stamps ran out. Anyway, somebody got mad because they couldn't get, they were drunk or something, they had to be sober. They torched the place. So
torched the church?
They torched this place, the share house.
Oh, okay. Called.
They torched share house and it burned down. It was like Christmas Day or something like that. You know? So now nobody has a place to eat anymore, you know, that lives in that neighborhood. Not only the vets, but you know, the families that live in that neighborhood that have been counting on that. So they came to us because they were about, you know, maybe three blocks away and said, hey, look, we got to put something together pretty quick. You guys got a kitchen, you know, we can provide the food and the people if we can use your space. So we quickly sort of put together an emergency meeting. I can't remember what all happened, but anyway, we provided a place in our church kitchen for this feeding program to go on while they rebuilt share house. So depending upon, you know, how you felt about that move on our part, how you felt, that was the story. You know, everybody pretty much could agree on the facts, but some people thought that was our congregation's finest moment, you know, that we stepped into the breach and, you know, we were feeding people, we were doing, you know, Jesus work. There were a couple of people who had some real, that church kitchens, as you know, are very proprietary. There's a woman named Frances Olson. I went to her grave cursing my name because, you know, let those people into my kitchen. So that would be, and I think, you know, for better or for worse, depending on how you look at it, that was a story that defined our congregation. And depending on how you told it and where you told it, you know, it became, and the role of the pastor sometimes does become that person or the community leader. And part of the task of leadership that Diana Butler Bass talks about is, you know, reframing the story and telling that story in a way that, so for example, one of the things she talks about, and I'm going to give you an article here in a second, one of the things she talks about is she says, you know, the story of mainline Protestantism is that it's basically the Titanic. And, you know, the pastors in the main line are basically rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, but it's the Titanic, it's got a hole in it, and it's going down, and that's it. And her thing is, you know, I don't think that's the right story. I think maybe it's the Mayflower. You know, the Mayflower was on its way to Virginia. And I realize I'm looking at Mark and thinking that Mayflower story's got some edge to it too, but drop that for a second. So the Mayflower is on its way to Virginia, you know, and it's hard trip and all that, and it ends up in, you know, Massachusetts. But I mean, you know, it becomes depending on, again, on who hears the story and how they tell it, it becomes, rather than a ship going down, it becomes a new adventure, you know, in a new place. Maybe that's the story of the Protestant mainline, with all of the, you know, the light side and dark side of that story.
How important is it to connect this to the Bible, to the gospel, to the proclamation?
Which, the church story?
Any of them.
I mean,
I think
some of that, I mean, again, is preaching. That's, you know, John came up earlier with the, you know, armor of God, using clothes from the, you know, that we wore in the Northwest. I think that would speak to people in a different way than talking about the armor of God. On Good Shepherd Sunday this past year, partly because of this, I talked about Good Salmon Sunday, and tried to lift up some of you know, images from the Northwest, and I think it did speak to people in a slightly different way. So some of it is, you know, trying to think about how we take our biblical story. Hearing you talk, Mark, about, you know, our creation story, you know, set a world away, but what does it mean? How would we reframe that from our prior country? So what do you think?
I'm in a group that, where we come and tell each other stories every week, and then pray, mm-hmm. or pray and then tell each other stories about what we've been doing.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very small group of women, and we're all coming from different places. And we have slightly different traditions, but I think we're all Christian. But it isn't really very connected to the gospel. It's mm. more about good works
okay.
that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, I don't want to give up the group, because I like these women very much. They're good friends now. And it's important to pray together too. But I'm a little frustrated by it, because it's not grounded in the proclamation. And for me, that is the core message that takes it away from my personality and from my intentions and from my motivations and from whoever I happen to be and how good I am.
How you're feeling that.
Or how uncomfortable I am.
Well, what you just put up our questions here.
I think it applies to what she's saying.
Yeah. So one way you could think about these stories is, what's God doing in the story? What are the people doing in the story? And then what can we learn here?
And you could ask the question, is there a scripture story that this resonates with? You know, what's, you know, sometimes there are books, again, that Alvin Institute puts out about how do we connect our story to the scripture story, and sometimes it is, what are the, you know, images in our story that connect us to a passage from scripture or a story from scripture. Sometimes you can go the other way, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say, I used to be in a group that met, and we had a little booklet that prompted us with things like that, and we would just be telling stories of the week, what we had done,
uh-huh.
but it was, the prompts were similar to this, like, what did the Spirit lead you to do this week? Or where was Jesus? Did Jesus, you know, appear
mm-hmm.
to you, you know, as in feed the hungry, give drinks of, you know what I mean,
yeah.
symbolic, those
yeah.
kinds of things. So it might be what he was saying, reframing the
story.
The purpose of the group, put it in different words, frame. Do you follow me? Or
yeah,
I do. You don't think they can be there?
Well, for
women.
One thing, they don't really, they're not very well versed in the gospel stories, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't read the Bible. And there's a certain amount of resistance to the core message of the crucifixion and resurrection. Some of them are offended by that.
Well, what's the quote about what the...
I mean, they go to Christian churches. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, so
they go
to
church on Sunday,
yeah.
but they don't particularly like the cross.
But they know. They know
myself.
The Holy Spirit, and they know
yeah.
Jesus, and that there's that quote about
Jesus was a good person. I mean, they certainly, but they're not. They really don't have the curiosity that I have to want to really get to know him better.
Mm-hmm.
Get to know why Christianity is such a powerful force in history and in our own lives. What makes it so? You know, that's a question that I continuously ask myself.
Preach the gospel when necessary. Use words.
Words.
Yeah.
Supposedly said by St. Francis, but probably not.
That's cool.
Jump in there.
Yeah.
This is interesting. There's a book by Dave Daubert in this Augsburg, whatever, fortress, whatever it is, this series called Living Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
And Daubert uses the Book of Acts, and he encourages to do something like a retreat where you take a kind of iconic story out of the Book of Acts where something's happening,
mm-hmm.
and then you're in these little groups, and you ask precisely these questions.
Right.
What
what's God up to here? What are the people up to here? And then out of that, he says, what are the guiding principles that, this is the development of guiding principles for congregations, but that using Acts as opposed to the gospel sometimes is a way where you've got a bunch of people who are somewhat confused about, well, what is this about?
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
We have a strange story that happened to us, so what's the point?
Yeah.
We don't
right.
have a point. And I think Daubert's book does a really good job. It's a little bit.
That's a good thank you.
One of the things that it seems to me like if we're thinking about ministry, I mean, I think that your, I don't know if it was your point, but my answer to your question is how important is it to connect it to the gospel? You know, at some point, if you're talking about a congregation, it's absolutely vital, because if you can't do it, and you might have to be pretty imaginative about how you do that. And sometimes you might have to be a little stealthy, but I think the other part of that is, I mean, you're a storyteller, so you know that you can take the same story and you can tell it in different ways, and depending on how you tell the story, you know, it's going to have a different impact on people. And so part of the thing, I think, that pastors or other leaders in congregations, you know, can do is to, first of all, listen for the stories and then try to connect them and reframe them, you know, in a way that can help that community. Part of the thing, if Egan is right, and I know we're not ready to concede that necessarily, but if he is right, that a lot of people come out here without a, you know, having shed a story, then it seems like one of the possible ways in which the Christian community can be useful is to help to connect them to a larger story of death and resurrection. And for me, that's where that salmon symbol is just a real powerful one that, you know, that resonates.
They come back and they die exactly where they were born.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where I see it, a real connection with Christianity,
yeah.
Is that Sabbath come back to exactly where they
so
were born.
What am I supposed to do? I'm lost.
And it's going full circle.
Yeah.
I just say, why I'm just still seeing the time. I think we can go on, but we need to bring it to close,
well,
and we can continue
can
this.
I just say one thing?
Just one
is
thing.
That, can you answer that first question? I mean, I never figured I could.
Well, take a stab at it.
Well, yeah.
Well, then,
I mean, what if you get it wrong?
Yeah. but I think that's part of the problem, John, is too many people know what God is doing here.
Oh, okay. Well,
for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know what God is doing here, but I know only too well what God is doing here, and if you would listen to me, you could find out.
Well, I want to, let me just make a few closing comments. I think some of what we're trying to do as we talk about ministry in the Northwest is that certainly, I think we're saying that, you know, it's not always the pastors telling the story, but we need to be listening to the people's story, and then, you know, again, in community, trying to make sense of what is God doing here in this place. So it's not you know, one directional. We never know for sure, but that doesn't keep theologians and pastors and people from not talking about
it. I think Marin's, you know, if people practice those questions on stories from the Bible,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's Acts or whether it's God, if they practice that, say, there is a kind of objectivity about that written story.
Yeah.
And then that pulls you back in, you know, if you need to tell our own stories, you say, well, compare, what is God doing? How do we understand God's presence here? What's God up to here? Because you can say all kinds of things, but what kind of has God's fingerprints on it? You know, what does God do?
And now you're not talking necessarily about the biblical story, you're talking about people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
What's the kind of thing that God does with people?
So part of the idea is to start with the biblical story,
yeah.
so people can get used to the idea,
right.
And then start
right.
saying, okay, if
right.
God's there, then what about?
I don't want to advertise my class, but that's the point of my class. You are there.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is you start with a Bible story, and then you retell it
mm-hmm.
and by putting it into your own place, where you live,
mm-hmm.
and who you know, and what goes on there. Like last night we were doing Levi's dinner party, and one of our members was an attorney in New York, and she says that he's got to be a mafiosa, and it will be at Umberto's Seafood Restaurant. be stronger. But in addition to that, we also just had fun. Mm-hmm. And it was just a good time, you know? And it was like a half hour because everybody left. Luke came late. He didn't get a chance to get in on all the stories, but we got in on two.
It's okay to advertise.
But did you have a, do you have a closing statement before we say our closing prayer and continue?
Can I add one
sure.
thing? And that is, I think it's not just a matter of getting to story, but it's a matter to getting to the real story. And pastors, when we get together, tend to tell the good part of the story. And there was a group of pastors in Washington, D.C. who were meeting consistently and doing that, you know, and everybody's telling what's going well. And mm-hmm. this one pastor one time said, we had Sunday school this past Sunday and nobody came. Mm-hmm. And that changed the whole tone of that group. Because after that they started to get to the real story.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some real trust
mm-hmm.
that began to be
mm-hmm.
built.
The
only time good stories,
yeah.
good stuff, the good works,
mm-hmm.
You're not maybe getting to the real story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you can help each other, and that's the empowerment.
Yeah,
it's not a brag session.
Well, that's what Martha Geese, this book, Up All Night, I don't know if you brought it, but again, she talked about, she wasn't planning to change anybody's life, she was just listening to people. And as they told her their stories, they realized they had these dreams that they weren't acting on, and just the act of telling their story empowered them to change their lives. And I guess I think that's some of what we're thinking. And again, I think it takes that trust, that risk. But I think, you know, faulting ourselves that sometimes, especially as pastors and leaders of churches, we aren't listening to anyone else's story to really see, you know, how God is working through that story. So.
Well, sometimes it's helpful when you use the Bible story too, because you don't have to be so confessional. It comes out kind of sideways.
That's true, yeah.
And so you still have some privacy. You're protected in a way. But you don't have to, like that story I shared with you.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't tell me that part of the story at the session. It came out later.
Right.
But would I have ever heard it if she hadn't gone to the session and played Jesus? I have no idea. You know?
Anything else, John?
Oh, no. That sounded, you know, just encourage people to listen to the stories.
Yeah, pick up. We've got a closing little prayer here, and then pick up the other handout. And again, continue to think about this. And as I say, we've got this online, and some. Part of what we want you to do, or part of our idea was that we're using an adult education curriculum that maybe you can use as your churches, is that you do some story listening within your churches. And when I did this with my church, they had a whole list of stories I'd never, you know, heard as I asked them to tell some of the stories of the church. And then we were trying to make sense out of, you know, where is God working in all this? And so again, it's a little bit different because we don't share much of a story here. But again, some powerful things happen as we can share, come up with our joint community stories. So let's say this prayer, then we can continue the discussion if you'd like. And please join me. Blessed to us, O God, the moon that is above us, the earth that is beneath us, the friends who are around us, your image deep within us. Amen.